Hey, welcome to A Runner's Life podcast, where we speak with Rose Harvey. Just to give you a bit of a heads up, this was actually recorded as part of the conversation that I have on Relay. So to give you context, Relay is a platform that I'm part of, where I'm joined by pro runners, amateur runners, track nerds, ultra athletes, shoe experts, coaches, and people that work in running media. And we come together to share our knowledge and talk about current running topics and speak to some of the people in that space. So we originally had a chat with Rose in the Chat with the Pro series, and this was a couple of weeks before the Chicago Marathon, where she took a massive 4 minutes off of a marathon PB, and she finished ninth place overall, finishing 2:23:21 at the 2023 Chicago Marathon. So she's now fifth on the UK all-time list, and with that result, it's got to be the Olympics next. So I'm sure she's going to have her guide booked for Paris. Not that she's going to be out there sightseeing, she's going to be out there racing, but it's going to be an amazing opportunity for her. So looking forward to seeing how that pans out next year. So with that being said, let's head over to the conversation on Relay that I had with Cara Goucher, Laura Thwaite, Peter Bronca, and of course, Rose Harvey. Hello everyone, welcome to or welcome back to Relay. In this episode of Chat with a Pro, we're joined by Rose Harvey. I'm also joined by my Relay teammates, Cara, Laura, and Peter. Rose, welcome to Relay.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Really pumped to have you on. We've had some technical difficulties, and this is, I think, like the fifth time we're trying to record. So hopefully this one goes out with no glitches. Anyhow, so I think obviously I want to start off with recent news. Cara's just come back from the Diamond League. It looked super exciting. I know Peter was super pumped to see, you know, his main man, Noah Lars, in your photo. You know, he's run to that fan club. You know, he's repping it hard. So he was pumped.
Best ever. Yeah, best sprinter ever. That's what I always say. No one's ever been better. I didn't realize I had been nominated, that I had elevated myself to the president of his fan club. But there's worse places to be. It was an epic end to the track season. I can't believe how long it's been going. I don't know about all of you. I can't believe how long some of these athletes have performed for. But it was remarkable. And yeah, now on to my favorite season, marathon season.
Does marathon season ever end?
No.
True.
It keeps going round and round.
It's year round.
It is.
Constant. Well, speaking of marathons, Rose, you're doing Chicago.
Yeah.
Extremely exciting. And so my first question for you, speaking of fall marathons and transitioning and the GOAT, Noah Lyles, if you could choose any song or wear any outfit to walk out to the start line of Chicago, what would it be?
Okay. So I think it would be Taylor Swift, Ready For It, because you know what? I'm not actually a massive Swiftie, but I spent some time in North Carolina with the Puma team, who are like so big into Taylor Swift. And now whenever I go over to America, I have that association. And obviously, I will be out in the States for Chicago, US Marathon. I just feel like it has to be that.
I love that. Yes. I'm a huge Swiftie.
That's a good song.
Stamp of approval.
Yeah, we approve. Well done. You can stay on the call.
Yes, you're welcome to be here with us.
I passed.
I think
why Chicago? Oh, sorry, Marcus.
I think I'm still trying to join the Swiftie Club. Like, I know you tried to convert me a little bit, but it's just not happened, so.
Well, you're not listening to the right. I'll send you the right songs to listen to. I'll get you on board.
I think you need to listen to it. You need to listen to it with a Swiftie, because then I abuse my Swiftie. This weekend, I posted two reels in one day, both Taylor Swift songs.
I think my last three reels have been Taylor Swift songs. So yeah. I'm in the same place.
Okay, good. You need to be with a Swiftie, because we will just, like Rose, she was with other people who loved her, right? It takes, we rub off on you, and then you catch it. It's like a disease.
Yeah. I'm thinking like,
once you catch it, it never leaves you. And it only gets stronger and more contagious.
It's like a super strain. Yeah.
Yeah. Super strain for sure. There's no vaccine for this one. So.
I wondered, like, during these major marathons, if they are blasting music during the race, like, would it be too much? You know, like, are you like, I'm in the pack. I'm among the pros. I'm ready for a move. Oh, wait, here's my favorite Taylor Swift song.
I think it depends, like, when it comes on, because sometimes it just, the loud noises can be so abrasive and you're just like, I can't deal with this right now, it's too much. But yeah, sometimes if it's a good song, it can really help, apart from if it gets stuck in your head for the next like 13 miles.
Have you been to the Chicago Marathon before, like in attendance?
No, I've never done a US marathon, so.
Oh yeah, of course. That's fun. Super exciting.
So how did you pick Chicago?
Well, I wanted to do a major, and there was basically, it had to be a fast one because I'm going for the Olympic qualifying time. So it was basically between Berlin and Chicago. I actually didn't get into Berlin, so that narrowed down the options. And then, yeah, Chicago came up, and I wasn't sure if I was going to get into that either because the field is stacked. But yeah, I got a place, so it was super exciting and a fast course. My coach is also in the US, so it'll be awesome to have my coaches there and be able to see the team and everything. So yeah, so everything's kind of fallen into place with it.
I don't know enough about your situation, like your coach and team. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so I'm coached by Alistair and Amy Craig, who are the coaches for the Puma Elite Team. So I'm sponsored by Puma, but I'm not actually technically part of the Puma Elite Team because I'm not out in North Carolina. I'm not based out there. But they coach me, and then I kind of go over for like little training camps, and just when the weather gets bad here, I can go over, and they adopt me for a bit, which is nice.
That's awesome. How long have you been with them, or when did you sign with Puma?
I signed with Puma just over a year ago, so like last May, a year ago in May. And then I started training with Alistair and Amy. It was actually just after the World Champs. So yeah, end of July, start of August last year. I've been with them for a year.
Awesome.
I don't actually know Amy well. I imagine if she was my marathon coach, I'd be slightly intimidated. She always has seemed extremely tough. I don't know if you've ever seen the video of her meddling at the World Championship. She like went to this crazy velociraptor arms and just like kicked down. And I was like, wow, this woman really knows how to go deep. What's she been like as transitioning? She's a coach now, and I know, obviously, but what's it been like having them as your coaches?
Yeah, they're awesome. Amy's actually the soft one. Like, Alistair's the hard one.
Wow.
I feel like Amy's the one that, you know, if you screw something up, she'll be like, it's okay, you know, you just had a bad day. Alistair will be like, no, that was crap. So it's good to have a balance between them.
Yeah, you need
both. They're both really good. Yeah, you need both. But yeah, they're both awesome, and they've got like so much experience in the marathon.
Rose, I thought it was really interesting kind of reading a little bit about like your journey into running and into the sport, because I felt in like a traditional sense, it was very different. And you got into it just a few years ago, like more seriously. And here you are running for Puma with one of the elite marathon groups here in the States and going into Chicago, chasing an Olympic standard. So yeah, do you want to talk a little bit about that? I just found it really interesting, just your pathway to where you are now.
Yeah, it's been a bit nuts. It's been a total whirlwind. I literally, like, I can't believe that 3 years ago I was, yeah, working as a lawyer and just kind of running as a hobby. I never dreamed of going pro or anything. You know, it was never on my agenda. But it was essentially lockdown changed everything. So I got made redundant, and then I had this time to train. And I basically said it as a bit of a lockdown project originally. And I guess just kind of found a hidden talent somewhere in there and loved it. I absolutely loved it. So it just kind of, it absolutely snowballed. It happened so quickly. But throughout that lockdown period, I had a big breakthrough at the end of it. I ran like 2:31 in the marathon, and yeah, very quickly from there, kind of went on to get an England best, and then went to the World Championships, and here I am, a year later, and then got signed by Puma, and yeah, been pro for a year, managed to quit my job, which was really exciting, and yeah, just put everything into running.
I love that. See, kids, there's 1,000 different ways to get somewhere. So many different pathways.
Yeah.
Rose, I was sorry that Oregon didn't, I'm out in Oregon, and I was sorry that our state didn't treat you better. I think we learned after the race that you had come down with COVID for the World Championships. Sounds like that was the case.
Yeah, I actually didn't know about it until after the race, but I basically like got cramped about 2 miles in, but like really badly in both legs. And I was like, this is not right. And I ran with it until just over halfway, but yeah, it got bad.
Sorry to bring up a not pleasant experience. It was funny because I was out there with friends running around, and one of my friends was like, I just met this man, and his wife apparently started running just a few years ago. And we're all like, what? Who is this person? So we were looking you up out on the course, and then we were sad to see that you had to stop. So I'm curious, what does that look like as you think about trying to, you know, get the British vest again? Like, what does that journey look like for you? And I imagine it's already started.
Yeah. So the window is open. And I guess Chicago it's not my only shot at it, but it's like a big shot at it. I've got until the window closes end of February for the Olympic qualifying time. But kind of the goal is to like go hard in Chicago, and hopefully that's it. I might have to do a spring marathon, but then it kind of gets into like, it's quite close. So if you do make the Olympic team, then it's quite a tight turnaround. So I think, you know, absolutely ideal situation is to just go really hard in Chicago and do really well and get the Olympic qualifying time. So that's plan A.
I have a question about that. Cause correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like previously you guys would often run like your trials at London. Like you would run like that's where a lot of times I felt like British athletes would qualify, where you guys would have like your own qualifying race, like at the London Marathon. So is this time around different than like the process has been before? Or like, how does that process look for UK athletes? Cause I don't think I understand it as well as obviously like the American way, like the American process.
Yeah, it changes quite a bit, but I think the window is shorter. So the thinking behind it is because London is end of April, it's then too short a gap. And I think they were basically seeing like people who qualified in London then weren't having a good Olympics because they had such a tight turnaround time. So that's why they shortened the window. But London, I don't know, maybe London was a trial 1 year, but normally it's just done on like times from any race. But yeah, I think they are trying to kind of be a bit more respectful of like the marathon and the recovery time after a marathon and being able to turn around. But I guess you must kind of have the same problem with the trials, right? Because it's, when are your trials, February?
Yeah, they're early February this year. They're usually around February or like end of January, I feel like, for like the last however many cycles, that's kind of when they are. So we've always had plenty of time to like do the trials. Yeah. Obviously we have that time to recover and come up, and then the Olympics are always at the end of the summer. So a little bit different for us.
Yeah. Do you like having a trial?
I do.
The system.
I don't know how Kara feels. I like the system. I think it creates a great race. And I think fans really understand it, and they can like really get into that when they know what's on the line. And it's just kind of like, you know, you got to show up on that day. So I know some people don't like it for that. Cause it really does boil down to one day. And as you know, in the marathon, if you have an off day, it can be tough, even if you've had a great season or you came in with one of the top times. But I think it gives everyone like a shot to like really go for it. And it seemingly like makes sense to me as far as like how you would select the team.
I like it too. I feel like it removes any like political stuff or, I mean, sure, I can remember times specifically thinking about track when like Sonia Richards-Ross didn't make the team once and it was like she was sick and it was so obvious that she should go to world champs in the 400 because she was going to win. So there are times where it doesn't work in our favor, but I think in general, it's just like Laura said, you know, the day you have to prepare for that day and everybody has an equal shot to make it. But it would be great to be selected ahead of time and not have to worry about it.
Yeah. I also like the sound of that too.
Right. Yeah.
Like a 12:20 start time in Orlando. I'm like, I don't know. It'd be nice to like go around Chicago, nail it and be like, yeah, done.
Yeah, I'm good.
What about like this year it's in Florida, so it's going to be really hot. Do you think that kind of changes the game a bit and that there'll be some people who can just run well in the heat and they might not actually be like the best marathoners for the Olympics, but they can just run well in the heat?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, you know, we can't know what it's going to be like, but yes, it, you know, it could be quite warm. So obviously, like, generally speaking, that can favor other athletes that tend to run well in those conditions versus others that maybe don't. Or again, it kind of changes how people just have to prepare for that so that you can be as ready as you can be. But it's definitely an element that I think will make it a really interesting race.
Yeah. And like all the courses are different, right? Like that's one thing about marathoning is every marathon is challenging for someone else for a different reason. Like our last trials were on a very, very difficult course. Like I ran it the day before and I was so beat up just cheering the athletes on the next day just from like jogging it. So Laura, I don't know how you ran so fast there. I really don't. That is such a hard course. But there are some people who are better at hills and some people who aren't. And it's kind of like, you know, maybe the safest way to send the best team, which is just emulate Paris perfectly. But unfortunately, we don't have the resources to do that in the US. We rely on a marathon that's willing to pay for us to come and put us up and host the race. And so then it comes like, what's the best option of those? And even in the States, we ended up with really just one because the other bid was disqualified. So the athletes know plenty ahead of time what they need to do to be ready and what it might look like. And, just like Paris. I mean, Paris might be really, really hot or it could be cool, right? Like anything.
I mean, talking of hot marathons, I mean, it's off topic, but Sydney was just the other day and it was like nearly 29, 30 degrees Celsius for a major. And I was just like, no, thanks. I'm not sure I want to fly that far to run in that heat, to be honest.
It's a no for me.
Yeah. How much money you got to spend to get to Australia? I was like, I don't know. Anyhow, I digress. I wanted to go back to the big half, which is a recent performance for you. Are there any sort of key takeaways that you reflect on in that race that you're going to take forward into Chicago? I know it's obviously a different distance, but just key points.
Yeah, I think a big one was pacing and trusting my own strategy. And I actually don't have that much like racing experience in that the marathons I've done, I've always been going for time. London, you end up by yourself for the last 10K. And so I haven't actually had that many races where I've been like racing other girls and going for a position. And the ones I have, I think I almost get a bit of imposter syndrome and I'm like, everyone else has loads of experience. I'm just going to go with their race plan and try and hang on. And I've kind of slowly realized that's dumb. And especially when you get like 10K girls in the mix who go off at like 5 flat pace, as a marathoner, I blow up. And my coach has tried to tell me this quite a few times. And I think finally I listened in the big half and stuck to my pace strategy. I was actually like back in fifth for ages and then kind of moved my way up to fourth and just hung there and then trusted that I could come back and hold it for the rest of the race and pick them off. And it worked. So I think that was like a really good lesson finally learned that I'm going to take into Chicago and just trust my own strategy and what my coach is saying and don't like get hung up on what everyone else is doing around me. That was a big one.
I'd love to hear like how you like manage that as well, Laura, as well, because that's something I guess you could speak of better than I could, like how you manage that pace judgment as well and trusting yourself.
Yeah, I liked what you said, Rose, because I feel like when I first like came out of college and I was slowly kind of like finding my way like on the pro side of things, I had imposter syndrome as well. And I remember, I don't know if Kara remembers this, but I raced the TC 10 mile like in 2012, maybe. I can't even remember. And Kara was racing and I'd never met her, but she'd obviously been an idol of mine for so long. And so all of a sudden you're on the start line with these women that like you had like posters of it, like posters of in your bedroom. And like suddenly they're next to you on a start line and you're like, why am I here? Like, I have no business being here. Like, this is terrifying. But yeah, like you said, you know, that kind of goes away as you start to race more and you kind of start to find and trust yourself within the races and really put the blinders on and focus on like your plan and like lean into what you have done to prepare specifically for that race. But it's easier said than done. It's really hard sometimes to like just not go at the gun and just throw yourself in it. I think some races you do that and then other races you have to be a little bit more calculated. But it's just knowing which strategy works where and where you're at with training and kind of where you are coming into it. But I've been there myself and sometimes still kind of have those moments where you're like, yeah, like everyone's doing like incredible things. And, it's easy to kind of be like, wait, like, can I race these people? But the answer is yes, you can. So definitely take that into Chicago. You deserve to be there. You've definitely earned that spot. And it's a fun part.
Carl, I'd love to hear your experience of that as well. To be honest, like, obviously it'd be good to get you, have you sort of transitioned between that point of like, trusting yourself and just racing your own race.
Well, I love, Rose, that you're like, I need to run my own race, because every marathon I ran, not every marathon, but most of the marathons I ran, I was told just go with the leaders and then outkick them. And I was always running, literally, I was just always running someone else's race. And it wasn't until, I'm trying to think, maybe 2012 Olympic trials, where I finally knew what I was capable of doing on that day. And it was like, okay, I'm going to stick to that, because that's the best chance I have of making this Olympic team. If I go with like a bold move, if Shalane or Des makes a bold move, I'm going to blow up. And so at that point, I was like, more than, you know, I was cresting the curve and the arc of my career and on the downside. And so I wish I had learned that lesson a lot earlier. There's no shame in letting people go and running the race that's right for you and making that progression and then coming back. And then the next time you have more, I think of someone like Emma Bates, that's done that really well. She's like, this is what I'm here to do. And this is a step to the next one. And so the sooner you can learn to like trust yourself and know what you're ready to do, I think the better it is for the race, but then even the rest of your career.
Peter, were you about to say something?
Oh, I was curious. I know a lot of athletes are thinking of, you know, have marathons coming up, and it's this kind of crunch time of how do you approach it? So I was curious how you're thinking about taking a crack at Chicago. I know there's, you know, sometimes people bring their own pacers. Sometimes they chatter and just try to find some people to run with. One thing I always find very humorous around Chicago is, you know, it's mixed men and women together from the gun. And so they often cut to a motorcycle. And just because there's men that is following elite women, and just because I know a lot of American men, I'll see these men who are just like, I'm like, I know that guy. And he's just so stressed. And he's just like right in the camera view, like, you know, the average fan is like, get out of the view. And I'm like, no, that guy's just doing whatever he can to like not fall apart, you know, like, so you'll be around, these people who, I mean, I think you'll probably look to your left and left to your right, be like, that guy's never going to make it at this pace. Like maybe this guy's more composed. Do you know people who will also be in attendance in Chicago, or how are you thinking about approaching the race?
I mean, I'm kind of hoping that there'll be a good contingent around, you know, that like 225-ish mark. The field's so deep, and just looking at kind of who's starting, I feel like there could be a group of women. But also, you know, I feel like it's a bit of a benchmark time. There'll be lots of guys going for it, so hopefully there'll be a good group. And actually, totally coincidentally, a guy who was just in front of me at the big half, who I ended up running with for a good chunk of the race, is a friend of a friend, and he's doing Chicago and going for 224, 225. So we've actually now like, we've done a couple of sessions. We did a session at the weekend together. He lives like really close. It's just the most bizarre thing. So hopefully he'll be like, I was saying to him like, Nick, you need to push to the front, and then and then we can run together.
Yeah.
I love that. The running community is so small. And like, there's so much open. It's hilarious. You can just like meet someone randomly like that and then be like, wait, what? You know, like five of the same people. And then ultimately you're like going to be at the same race, eyeing the same goal. I love that.
Totally.
I think I just want to go back to the big half. And I know you mentioned in your podcast recently about mile 11 being a bit of a challenging point where you had that kind of difficult moment and you were talking about that mental chatter and trying to like get sort of go through it and back into a kind of a more calm space. Could you talk a little bit about that and I guess the kind of things that you're looking to develop from that?
Yeah, it's that was another kind of big takeaway for the race. And I think in a marathon you have a bit more grace because you can kind of mentally go off a bit for a mile and it's not a disaster. But in a half, when you lose like 5 seconds over a mile, well, that's a bigger chunk. And I think in the big half generally, you know, I went into it like a really positive mindset. Training had gone well and I was just, you know, I wanted to just have fun with it. I hadn't raced a half in a while and it was British champ. So I went into it very much like in a good place mentally. But yeah, I think one thing I noticed I struggled with was when it started to really hurt around mile 11, I started thinking about how much it was hurting. And I kind of go into this, I feel like I have a real marathon mindset and it's almost like my body thinks I'm always doing a marathon. So at mile 11, it's not like push through it. You've only got 2 miles. It's like, oh God, I'm going to blow up. And then it took me like a mile to be like, hang on, you're nearly there. Just forget about how you're feeling and just trust it and run. And then as soon as I clicked out of that, like I was able to pick up the pace. So I obviously wasn't blowing up that catastrophically, but it definitely was a reflection and something I then took back to my sports psychologist of like, how do I click out of that like chatter and going and kind of looking internally and worrying about how I'm feeling? Because my sports psychologist straight away was like, well, it doesn't matter how you're feeling. Like, don't check in with yourself. And this is something that's come up before actually on like race strategy. I think one time I was like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, get to halfway and like check in. And they were just like, do not check in with how you're feeling. Terrible idea. Forget about how you're feeling. And it's definitely something I've like practiced in sessions, you know, when that starts to come in of like, oh, it's hurting. It's just like, let it go. Doesn't matter. Just focus on your form or focus on your feet or whatever it is that can like bring you back to your surroundings and the process. And it's something I find really helpful, but I just need to get there a bit quicker, I think.
I love that because I always struggled. You guys were talking about imposter syndrome. I'd be like lining up being like, I never learned what organic was till I was 30. Like I grew up on goulash and Spam. How did I get here? And then I could talk myself out before like the race even started and then even in the race. And so I worked with a sports psychologist a lot too. And I totally can picture and feel that point in the race that you're talking about. And I had to work on it in practice. I couldn't just apply it on race day, but it was like, for me, it was like a word that I would just say to myself and it would instantly calm me and be like, no, I've been here and I got through it in workouts. I've done this. I've been through here. But I love that you acknowledge that because I think everybody has those points in a race. I just think some people just won't admit it because they think it makes them weak. But I think it's just a reality of you're running hard for a long time. And your brain at some point's like, I don't want to do this anymore. Or your body's a little tight and your brain's like, hey, why are we doing this? You know? And if you have to practice that so that you can be like recenter yourself and refocus yourself. And I think it's cool that you just talked about seeing a sports psychologist. Cause I don't think enough people like admit that that's a hugely important piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. I don't get it. I'm like, you train your body so hard, but then it's as much a mental battle as it is a physical one. So like, why don't you train your mind as well?
Yeah. I think Kara's point is correct where it's like, I know for a long time I was like, oh, I don't need to see a sports psychologist because, like, I'm good. Like, I have it all. You know, like, I don't need that. Like,
I'm so sweet.
I don't need it. But it's so true. It's so helpful because so much of this sport is mental, and the little tips and tricks that we all, I think, have to practice and utilize ourselves to really work through those, like, ebbs and flows of a race. Because, yeah, like, we're running hard for a long period of time and it's going to hurt. We're all in that space. But it's who's able to, like you said, just not check in to that and kind of like let it pass and stay in that space. Those are the people that, you know, obviously really like go on to have success. I think that's so much of the key is navigating that. But we need help to do that, just like we need like coaches and PTs and like all these other things. So totally. I love that too. I love that you talk about that on your Instagram.
Me too. My husband used to always be like, it's going to hurt. Don't let that catch you off guard. It always hurts, right? And just know it's going to come. And don't let it catch you off. You're not going to go out there and feel flawless. Like, we all have like one race where that happened. And that is the unicorn that we hold on to. But that doesn't happen. Most of, you know, 99.9% of the time, there's that point where you're like, oh, I'm hurting. And so don't fear it. Like, know that it's coming and have your toolbox, like Rose was talking about. Her thing is like, I'm not going to acknowledge that. I'm going to move on and focus on my breathing or my form or whatever works for you. So yeah, just again, I love it when people talk about this stuff because I think it's super important.
Same. I'm picturing like when someone rings your doorbell and you're like, let's pretend we're not home. Like, you know, it's like, yeah. Your body's going to be like, you're not feeling well. This is hurting. And you're like, just don't
answer the door.
I don't live here anymore. Sorry.
I'm going to hold on to that, Peter. That's actually
really good. That is great.
Just don't check in. I'm going to use these myself.
Well, I ran Chicago years ago, and I just recall, like, it's very exciting early. It's very exciting in the middle because you come back through town, and then you kind of head south, and it gets kind of quiet there for a while. And then you head north, and you can see the skyscrapers, and you're like, oh, no, that's where the finish line is. They're by the skyscrapers. And you're like, don't think about that. Don't think about that. So be forewarned. Like, when you turn north, you still have, you know, you're in that final 10K, which is like, I was saying to someone the other day, like, what tips and tricks do you have for yourself? Like, bring all the tools to the party, you know? How do you think about, what's it been like as you've leveled up? Like, have you adopted new tricks for that final 10K, or is it like old tried and true things have worked for you?
Yeah, I definitely think I've practiced and focused my training more around that final 10K. Because in the early marathons I did, I don't think I really appreciated like how hard it is and how good you can feel up to mile 20 and then it's hell. So I think just being ready for it. And my coach as well is like so focused. He always talks about it in sessions. He's like, right, what we're doing, we're training for that last 10K of the marathon. Like, forget about the rest because you're going to feel all right unless you've gone off way too quick. You know, you're going to feel all right. So just focus on, like, preparing for that last 10K. So a lot of my sessions are, it's all about, like, hitting marathon pace or a bit quicker right at the end and just preparing your body to be able to do it. And I think having done that work gives me quite a lot of confidence going into Chicago, because I know I can like pick it up on tired legs.
I know we've spoken a little bit about that with Matt Fox as well in previous like, episodes of like Sweat Elite, and I thought it was quite interesting. But I just want to go back to what you guys were talking about before. I know you gave like another deep sort of meaning about, you know, the door and, you know, where you focus on, but I thought Swifties would have said something about shaking it off. I thought that would have been the key word.
No, Marcus, it used to be my pump up song. I used to play that in my head. So I have done that.
I'm pretty sure that came out after I stopped running competitively, or that would have been my walk up to the start line song. Absolutely.
That's my karaoke song, like for so long, Shake It Off. So, I mean, I don't know. You can do a lot with that song.
Karaoke, drive to easy run. There's a lot of scope.
You see what we're doing here, Rose? We're just chipping away. You see how Marcus even back into the conversation? So
that literally is the only song that I know And I've had other friends trying to convert me into being a Swiftie. I'm like, that's all I know.
Laura and I will make you a great mix of T-Swift songs that will rope you in. I'm actually super excited for this challenge. So we'll chat later, but this is definitely happening.
Yeah, we're doing it. We're coming for you, Marcus. You're going to love it.
The Swiftie is coming for me, yeah. I know, I believe it. But I was interested you talk about that, the marathon effort as well, because that's something actually Matt's been putting into my training. I'm not trying to compare training, but like I thought it was quite interesting. Like, there's not, I mean, I'm not trying to say there's a like a secret recipe to marathon training, but I think that's quite an interesting way to add that effort in at the end, just to get your mind mentally prepared for that, where it's going to go to, because there's a lot of time to think.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think just like not being scared of that, if you can be as confident in that last 10K as possible, then yeah, when it starts to really hurt, you know you've got through it in training, so you can get through it again.
Although we've spoken about just what it's like being a pro, the other side of being a pro is the media side, and especially with social media. Can you talk a little bit about like how you manage that and like the role that social media plays in your training?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, I mean, to be honest, it was like just before I went pro, when I had like my big marathon breakthrough and ran 2:31. Before that, I'd deleted my Instagram. So I was like, then someone was like, you should probably get Instagram because brands care about it. And I've kind of slowly, I mean, I don't have a big following at all. And so I feel like I probably get the nice side of it. You know, I don't have enough critical mass to get the bad side and all the criticism, which I know a lot of athletes do. And, you know, I'm sure it will come one day and it must be tough. Eilish McColgan speaks after a lot about it. And some of the comments she just gets, I'm like, who are these people? Yeah, it's horrible. So I think, yeah, I can't really speak from much personal experience of having the negative sides of it. But I think with anything, you know, it can be a force of good and a force of bad. It really makes my day when if someone comments or messages me being like, you know what, you've motivated me to go out for a run today. That literally like makes my day. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. That's, you know, that's why I do it. So I think that side of it can be so positive, but you do have to be very conscious, and especially as a pro, I think you have to be very conscious of like, it is someone else's highlight reel, and you can get so wrapped up in like comparing to what everyone else around you is doing, especially coming into marathon build up and lots of other people are doing marathons and you're trying to kind of see where you line up, and it can be a bit of a dangerous rabbit hole for that. But I try to just, yeah, block it and make myself just go on it to, you know, post and do the positive social media and not compare. But it's tricky sometimes when it comes up and get into a scrolling rabbit hole.
Yes, we've all been there.
Because when you think about it, like when you look at your social media, it's quite immediate. So you're thinking it's like quite, there's a lot there. But when you look wider, there's only like a small number of professional runners and small number of marathoners. So sometimes I think we get so wrapped up in like, it's everybody, but it's like only a couple of people.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. You get so absorbed in like your own reality and what's around you.
The comparison is really hard, right? Like I didn't have social media in my career. Thank God. I mean, I did at the very end. Yeah, I know. I did at the very end, but it was like at the end and I knew that. And even then I would be reading other people's workouts and be like, I can't believe they're doing that. How are they doing that? Like I was training for the 2016 marathon trials and I was doing the best workouts of my life. And then I would go on Instagram and read other people's workouts and I'd be like, what am I doing? Like I'm in the best shape of my life and I could never do that workout, you know? And then at the trials, I beat all those people whose Instagram posts made me nervous. So it's really hard to not compare yourself. Even like I said, when everything is going so well for you, it's still hard to not be like, oh, they're doing more and they're doing it faster. And it's tough. I think it's really tough for athletes now. It's a totally different game when you're constantly flooded and inundated with what everyone else is doing. Because the way to be the best athlete you can be is to focus on yourself and make your own small progress and be confident mm-hmm. in that's leading you to your overall big goal, but it's tough. It's tough. It's just a different game than it was back when I was running, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And it is like brands do care about it. So I think it is, you know, it's kind of, you've got to accept like it is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you said, it's just finding that balance with it, right? Of like, you know, using it to kind of like share your experiences and kind of, you know, like what you're going through or what training's been like, or however you want to like, you know, mold yours, and the marketing like component of that, that obviously is conducive to brands and partnerships and things like that. But then also setting that balance for yourself of like how much you're going to be on it. Or like you said, if you're really in a marathon build or like you're in the last few weeks before the big race, like kind of going on doing what you need to do, but then not scrolling and like getting off of it or like limiting time or things like that, because it's so easy to go down those rabbit holes, especially as we're all getting closer to like the same race or like, you know, whatever everyone seems to be training for. And then once you start to kind of, once that doubt kind of starts to creep in, it can be really hard to like stop that slide. So it's just figuring out the balance of like what, how to use it, but how to also, like Kara said, keep the blinders on and like focus in on yourself. But it's hard. It's hard.
It's so hard. I'm 45 and will never race again. And I had to set a limit on my phone because I would be obsessed. Like, it just doesn't even affect my life. Like, you were talking about the rabbit hole earlier. I'm like, where did the last 3 hours go? Why am I obsessing about this person's training who I am never going to race? And so, yeah, of course, I can control it and I could turn it off. But right now I have 20 minutes on Twitter and 20 minutes on Instagram, and it just shuts off. And I have to go into my settings and change it if I really want to. And it's, and I'm like, that's embarrassing. No, I'm done.
That's embarrassing. You're like, no, I'm gonna give myself like 20 yeah. more minutes.
And I'm like, I'm embarrassed right now. Like, I would, to my son, I'd be like, no, you used your minute. So, you know, anyway,
you didn't pace yourself, you went too hard.
Yeah. <And now>. Yeah. It's true.
Is storytelling, I'm curious, being on a team, do team members discuss this, like approaches to how to go about telling your story? I mean, I think it's, I sense that people get stuck down the rabbit hole of stressing about posting too much or posting too little, or like, just like, I wonder if that's something that's discussed, like, here's how so-and-so has made sense of it and like put it in a healthy place.
As in with the Pima team?
Yeah, just like, I think it's interesting you moved from just like thriving as an individual and then maybe having a small team around you to like, now you have peer pros that, you know, you're able to, maybe social media is not the number one thing you learn about with each other. Maybe there's other things that have really stood out, but I'm curious, since we're talking about that, like, is that this type of thing discussed? Like, okay, we all did a workout together. How are we going to... tell this story or not? I don't know. I think it could be, it could occupy too much mind space.
Yeah, no, I mean, not really. I think the Pima team actually like don't seem to do that much on social media. And I mean, the guys I train with at home, I basically have like one main training partner at home who I do most of my sessions with. But he's like not really on social media either. So they will just take the piss out of me for, you know, making reels of the workout and putting it up. And but I love it.
Even that's, yeah, that's gotta be hard. I remember I was years ago, I was helping Gwen Jorgensen with some pacing, and then she was like, handed me her phone. She's like, I'm sorry to do this. I need to take a bite of my protein bar and I need you to record a 15 under 15 second video, you know, of me taking a bite and talking about it. And I'm like, hey man, paying the bills. Here we go. Like, however it works.
As Taylor says, haters gonna hate, but and you just gotta do your thing.
There's always a reference there to Taylor. Actually, just going on that point about storytelling, and I found this is quite an interesting thing because we're both in social media as well. We're all on social media, and we were at the Sir Chimnoy 10K race earlier this year in Battersea Park, and you got the course record for the 10K, and I noticed afterwards, like, I'm just there talking about it, posters, like pictures, reels, that kind of stuff, and I'm like, you didn't even say anything about it. It was just like, it just went under the radar.
I don't think I even realized it was the course record. I was really annoyed because I wanted a PB, and basically my coach had like said, don't do that race because I don't want you to take Prefret. And like, you can't run a PB of tired legs. And I went in being like, no, training's going really well. I can do it. I'm definitely in 10K PB shape. And so he's always right. And it's really annoying. And I didn't run a PB and I was mostly annoyed that he was right. So I was focusing on that. I didn't even know it was the course record around there. But it was kind of a bit of a last minute jump into that race, to be honest. So it didn't feel like a big deal at the time.
No, that's fair. Because I sort of think about it as well, like in your day-to-day job, you go to work, but you don't necessarily post about it on social media. Like, hey, here's me at the photocopier, da-da-da-da, what performance?
But you should, Marcus. You should.
I will now. I will. So I guess, yeah, there's definitely more pressures on the other side, like from what you're saying as well. Like, I guess the pressure to talk about or not talk about performances and just like just doing your own thing.
Yeah, and I think it's also like trying to find the balance between how much to share, because you want to be authentic, and I kind of don't want it to all be a highlight reel, but at the same time, you know, some things you just don't want like a million people piling in on and you don't need the views on. So it's a difficult balance to get, but yeah, I definitely look at like how other people do it and who does it well, but I think I just try to focus on, I guess, being authentic, but like, yeah, showing a kind of positive outlook, but being authentic too.
I guess like your friends will like forget, but the internet always remembers.
Comforting.
Be mindful of that.
I was curious, Rose, as you move to being a pro, I would think it would be like, okay, now I'm serious about this, but you were thriving, finding your own rhythm, you know, pandemic times. I'm curious, were there positive things, but also negative things of like moving towards that, like, I'm going to take it very seriously now? I mean, you've continued to excel, so it's going well, but I'm just curious what those takeaways have been in that transition.
I think finding, firstly, injuries. I obviously built up very quickly, progressed very quickly, but with that came quite a few injuries. So kind of trying to be patient with it and finding the balance and what works for me. And just, to be honest, not having, because I haven't had all that experience, I haven't had that time to like learn what works. And so it's going to be, you know, you're going to make mistakes and you're always trying to push your body to the limit. And I guess like just before it breaks, and inevitably, if you don't know where that line is, you're going to cross it at some point. So I've had kind of a few, actually, until this is like the first marathon build, which don't want to jinx it now, but has been smooth and no injuries. So I think I'm learning the balance, but that's definitely been a big one. I think just having, to be honest, surrounding myself with people who actually know what they're doing, because I do not know what I'm doing, but my coaches do. And I've got a lot of good people around me. So having that guidance like solidly in place now has really helped. I think the other big thing is like finding the balance between how much do you want running to be the only thing in your life? And obviously I went from the real extreme of working full time and run. It was like fitting running wherever I could, but work was first. And then I swung completely the other way and was just pro and just focused on running for a bit. And I wanted to go to all the cool training camps and be abroad and not have to stress about like, oh, I've got to do a Zoom call on UK time zone or whatever. So I really embraced it for a while. And then I've kind of found, I think in the last like 5 months, just a little itch. I'm like, I need something else. You know, I need to like keep my brain going. And I don't actually perform as well when I'm like so 100% focused on just running. So I need something else. And that was actually why I like started my own podcast and been working a lot on that. And just having that like something else. I mean, it's so like flexible and, you know, I'm still working for myself, which is great. But just having something else has been really good, actually. I feel like it's given me a bit of a new lease of enthusiasm.
Yeah, I've always found that too, to like, it's nice to have something to step outside of the world that we can get so caught up in, and have that distraction or those hours in the day where you're kind of just like not so focused on like training and recovering and like all the things that you're doing for this, for the, you know, for this like intense thing that we do. I've always enjoyed having something to kind of like pivot and kind of like take a breather and like do something else. And again, I think it helps you or us remember too, that we're like a full human and we're not just a runner. Cause I've struggled with that myself, like in my identity and like, who am I? So I think it's nice to have things like that, that like you said, you're using your brain and you're doing all these other things that like make you, you, I think that's really important to like figure out what that is.
That's so important, I think, too. I echo both of you there for sure. Because when you are a professional athlete and like the goal is the goal, it's easy to just get so locked in, and then it means everything. The result means everything. And I'm sure for you, Rose, coming from like not a job, like a real job, right? You weren't like working at a running store. You had like a real career, to just didn't do nothing, like it's easy to get hyper-focused and overthink and overanalyze. And sometimes that can steal the joy of what it is that you're doing. So, yeah. I mean, for me, I just had a baby to distract me. But like, really, I needed a distraction. I wasn't loving it anymore. I was so focused that I didn't know who I was without racing. And the races meant way more. Even though I believe in putting your heart on the line and pouring everything into it, the races, the way it made me feel and the way it meant to me and my worth, it was out of control, and it shouldn't have felt that way. Right. So I love that you started your podcast. You were able to recognize that. I think that's so awesome. And I think it will extend your career so much.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Cause at the end of the day, races, like so much of it is out of your control. Mm-hmm. So I think if you are like, so focused on, you know, I've got to get this result to like be happy and be fulfilled. It's you know, you don't know it's going to go well.
No.
Yeah, it can get really dark when you start doing that. Yeah, that can be a slippery slope as well. So how is the podcast going? How long have you been doing that?
It's really new, but we're really enjoying it. We're on episode 5, so season 1. So yeah, it's a very, very new gig, but just started it with one of my good friends who we met when we were in the same training group. She works in finance, but hates it. And she's kind of going through a bit of what I went through of like, I don't want to do this like 9-to-5 grind that I don't enjoy anymore. So she's having a whole rethink on her job. And she's like, I want to just do something I love for a bit. So she's like, I want to start a podcast. And I've been thinking about it for ages as well. So we came together and just, I feel like we also always used to, it's called 5 Miles Easy, and we used to do our 5 Miles Easy runs together and kind of have a bit of a debrief on like running. And we both have the same sports psychologist group. And so we used to have a bit of debrief after sessions and talk about a lot like mindset things that we've learned. And we're like, yeah, we can bring this to a podcast. So it's been a really fun project, but yeah, we love it.
That's awesome.
You get to meet so many cool people.
Very true.
I guess what's one of the biggest lessons you've learned about podcasting?
I'm not an editor. That's been my biggest learning. We started off with like this proper DIY setup in my living room. And we were trying to do all the editing. And very quickly, we were like, right, okay, we're going to get an editor. And then we just moved to a studio. And we were like, we're just going to go to the studio and do everything for us. So we're at that stage.
That's why I joined Relay, because I can talk, but then I don't have to edit. Or at least not yet, I don't.
No, we never will.
Yeah. That's not why Karen is here. We're not editors either.
Matt's probably thinking there's still time. Yeah. Actually not. Obviously, talking about editing, I think I'm gonna have to wrap this up now, because I'm gonna have to edit this episode. So thank you all for joining, and Rose, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us in this episode of Relay Chat with a Pro. Cara, Laura, Peter, thanks for joining as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for having me.